It was Christmas Eve, 1914, on the front lines of the Great War in Europe. Germans and British troops were dug into their trenches on either side of a war zone. And somewhere in the middle of that cold, homesick, lonely night, the British look over and saw a Christmas tree being lifted from the German side and put up over on top of the trench. It had candles on it. And they couldn't quite believe their eyes, and they couldn't quite figure out if what this was all about. Was this a trick? What was going on? And then all of a sudden, they heard singing. They heard, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, alle Schacht. And so they returned. All is bright round yon virgin mother and child. And all of a sudden, the German soldiers came up over the trenches. And the British soldiers came up over their trenches. And they met in the middle. And the Germans brought their cake and their cigars and their candy and candles. And the British soldiers brought their steamed pudding. The Brits are always bringing steam pudding. And their cigarettes. And they joined together on that Christmas Eve night, and they played, and they laughed, and they told stories, and they played soccer. And their commanding officers were at a loss the next day when many of these soldiers refused to shoot at each other because they had become friends and brothers, not enemies. And many thousands of soldiers, it said, had to be redistributed so that they could engage in what they were there to do, to fight this war. It was documented in several places. An incredible story. To see another is to see the face of God. Let's pray. God, open our hearts to see you in another's face, to see you within our own face, as we hear and listen for your word to us this morning. Amen. Our story this morning that Janet shared with us and with the kids about is the story of Jacob. And Jacob is quite a character in the biblical story. He really is a trickster. The name Jacob means heel, because when he was like heel of your foot, because when he was born, it said he was grasping the heel of his brother Esau as they were born. And that grasping, that desire to get ahead and to get everything that life had to offer was what really characterized Jacob's life. He was a go-getter, and he was willing to do anything that he needed to do to get what he wanted. The story goes that he wanted the firstborn blessing. Esau was the firstborn, and Jacob wanted the firstborn blessing. And so his brother Esau came in from the fields. As Jan said, he was hairy and kind of a man's man and the hunter, and he came in, and Jacob had prepared this stew, and Jacob said, I'll give you this bowl of stew if you give me your firstborn blessing. And Esau was so hungry, you know, well, I don't care, whatever, I just want the stew, you know. And he ate the stew, and Jacob took it seriously. So when Isaac, their father, was ready to give the blessing, Jacob dressed up like Esau and went in and received the firstborn blessing before Esau could get it. Esau was so angry that Jacob had to flee. And he ran away to his uncle's house. And he lived there for 20 years. And in those 20 years, he did well for himself and he did well for his uncle. He increased their flocks. He increased their wealth. And he married his two cousins, Leah and Rachel. Leah, who was the older one, produced 10 sons. Rachel, who was the favored wife, only had one at the time of our story today. And yet he felt that there began to be this conflict between he and his father-in-law. Their wealth needed to be separated, and so he left and felt called to go back to where he came from. And he sent word to say, "I'm coming," to Esau. And the messenger came back saying that Esau is coming to meet you with 400 men. So you can imagine that he's just a little nervous at this point in the story. His brother, who he's stolen his blessing, is coming to meet him with 400 men. And that's where the story picks up, and I've asked Michael to read the rest of the story to you.
The same night, he got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me about your name." But he said, "Why is that you ask my name?" And he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him, and he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore to this day the Israelites do not eat the thigh muscle that is on the hip socket, because he struck Jacob on the hip socket at the thigh muscle. Now Jacob looked up and saw Esau coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids with their children in front, then Leah with her children, then Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on ahead of them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. When Esau looked and saw the woman and children, he said, "Who are those with you?" Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And finally Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I met?" Jacob answered, "To find favor with my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob said, "No, please. If I find favor with you, then accept my present from my hand. For truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God, since you have received me with such favor. Please accept my gift that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have everything I want." So he urged him, and he took it.
Thank you. This story pulls me on kind of a primal and personal level. We all know what it's like, I think, to wake up in the middle of the night and wrestle with ourselves and with God. We all know what it's like to be facing seeing someone who we've had a conflict with and maybe haven't seen them for a long time and anticipating that meeting. God comes to Jacob at his most vulnerable point, this man, God, shadow in the middle of the night that comes and wrestles with him. Before Jacob goes to meet Esau, he's forced to do something that's even more important, and forced to face the most significant struggle, which is the struggle within his own soul. To look at that child who has been struggling to surrender. To look at why he's been hungering for what he can't earn. To look at why he's been grasping for blessing his whole life. God enters into that vulnerable place and invites Jacob to wrestle. It's an extraordinary God who wrestles but does not overcome. It's an amazing God who is willing to settle for a draw in a wrestling match. It's a stunningly compassionate God who offers a blessing to Jacob, even when Jacob has been this kind of trickster and cheat his whole life. Before there is reconciliation with Esau, Jacob has to reconcile with God. He wrestles, he pleads for and receives a blessing and a new name, Israel. Israel means one who strives with God, one who goes all out with God. So from grasping the heel to one who is willing to engage, to wrestle with God. The next morning, he goes out to meet Jacob, or meet Esau, and he has everything. He has wealth, he has a big family, and yet he walks with a limp. And I think it's that walking with a limp that actually allows him to meet Esau, actually allows what's happening the next day to happen. I don't think you can talk about wrestling with God in the night without being a little vulnerable yourself. So I wanted to tell you about a period of my life of wrestling in the night. At the age of 30, I had everything I had wanted. I had lived in Europe for a few years and been able to explore and learn and work there. I love Europe, so that was a dream come true. I had met and married the love of my life. We had a baby, beautiful baby girl. We were living in an adorable cottage on a street with a perfect name, Cherry Lane. But I woke up in the morning and I felt empty most mornings. And it was that emptiness that led me to begin to look at my own life, to begin to pay attention to what made me tick, to what I was passionate about, to what tripped me up, to tell myself the truth about my story. And as I began to do that truth-telling, I began to make some changes. I began to make some adjustments in significant relationships in my life. I began to ask questions of my faith that I'd been told I wasn't allowed to ask because they were too dangerous. You know, that whole slippery slope thing. And it was a very, very difficult and dark night that lasted several years. But early in those years, there was a night, and I have told very few people this, so why not hundreds of people today? I woke up this morning thinking, do I really want to say this? But I woke up, but I don't think we talk about this kind of stuff enough, so I'm going to say it. I woke up one night after having this kind of dream where I was sitting in the lap of God, and I was completely embraced by the arms of God. And I woke up actually weeping because of the love and the compassion and the total acceptance that I felt in the middle of this wrestling. I haven't had a dream like that since or before. But it was a dark night. And in the middle of that dark night, in the middle of all that wrestling, I grew to know that I was loved. I grew to understand and be able to receive the blessing of God in a way that I had not been able to before. And it took several years, but one morning I woke up and I realized I wasn't feeling so empty anymore. That period of my life was a wrestling. And because of the shifts in relationships, because in the process of it I lost a community that I had been part of and had supported me for many years, because I lost the comfort of a faith with very easy answers, I emerged with a bit of a limp. It still hurts. I still grieve. I still struggle with some of the things that came out of that time. And yet it is that limp that I walk with that has walked me into a place of greater freedom, of being able to truly love in a new way and to truly see others, and to, when I hear of others' pain, to see in it reflected my own pain and struggle that I experienced in that time of wrestling. Jacob had three encounters with God in the night throughout his story. And so I don't think it's one wrestling and then everything emerges and it's bright and happy the rest of our lives. But it's true that there are periods in our lives and there are moments when we are asked to do some deep wrestling with ourselves. And it would be easy to say this is all psychological stuff and, yeah, we're all supposed to know our stories and know our backgrounds and that's what it says. But there's something deeper than that. There's something that has been happening since the beginning of the human race where someone like Jacob wrestles in the night, where Jesus goes into the wilderness for 40 days, where Paul, after his conversion, leaves for a couple of years to do we don't know what, but he's off the map. This process of, and this journey of wrestling with God is something very human. Something that happens to all of us, and an invitation we're all asked to accept. To find that our identities can be changed as we wrestle with God. We can find ourselves to be known as those who have wrestled, who have striven, who have gone all out with God. I believe it is the reconciliation with God that Jacob experienced the night before that allows his reconciliation with Esau the next day. The brothers meet and Esau embraces Jacob. And Jacob says, to see your face is like seeing the face of God. How did he know that? Because the night before he had actually seen the face of God within his own soul, within his own wrestling. Esau refuses Jacob's material gifts, saying, I have enough. And Jacob insists, I have everything I want. Notice that neither of them feel any need. This goes beyond, I think, their physical wealth to their emotional wealth. They are able to be reconciled because they're both full. They meet in their fullness. The blessing of God has become so real in that moment that there's no need to hold on to resentment. There's no need to keep track of what the other one has done wrong. Their fullness does not depend on each other. They have forgiven and they have been forgiven and they embrace. The life one lives with God and the life one lives with human beings are two sides of the same coin, said one commentator on this passage. What helps me understand what this may mean, this living with God and living with others, is a concept by Croatian theologian Miroslav Volf, where he says we're called to have a permeable life. Permeable life. To live without boundaries around who we are means that anyone and anything can define who we are. And that's not a good thing. To live with very rigid boundaries around who we are means that nothing can change. No one can change our mind. No one can get to us, not even God. We're wrapped up so tight. But Miroslav Volf suggests the idea of permeability in our identity. That we can hear another and see another and experience encounter with others. And that changes who we are. That changes our sense of identity. Doesn't change our complete identity. We still have our boundaries. And yet we're able to listen and be heard. A great example of this is the book and the movie and the musical Les Misérables. Two characters, Jean Valjean and Inspector Javert. If you don't know the story, or just as a reminder of this great story, I had fun listening to the music this week while I was preparing my sermon again. It's such a great, great story. Jean Valjean is a man who has stolen a loaf of bread and tries to escape from prison several times, so he ends up being in prison for 19 years. Javert is the prison guard. who sees him as only a prisoner and a thief. When Valjean leaves prison, he leaves his identity and he becomes a mayor and a businessman in a town, and he completely changes who he is, contributing to the good of the world and becoming this compassionate, functioning citizen. When he encounters Javert again through various circumstances, he's forced to reveal his identity to Javert. And Javert goes on the hunt again for Valjean. And so Valjean goes into hiding, and Javert continues to hunt down Jean Valjean. The revolution happens, and Javert is captured. And he is given to Valjean to kill. And Jean Valjean takes Javert and he walks him out into the streets and he lets him go. And Javert cannot comprehend. His boundaries are so rigid that he cannot accept mercy at the hand of this man who he knows is a terrible person. He can't handle that shift. He can't take it into his being, so much so that he takes his own life. Valjean, on the other hand, is not a perfect man. He makes mistakes. Sometimes he loves too much. He struggles. And yet throughout his life, we see him continuing to reach out to love, continuing to offer mercy even to the one who has hunted and haunted him his entire life. And as he dies in the musical, the words are sung echoing this story, to love another is to see the face of God. A permeable life. A permeable life that allows others in, that allows God in. Jacob's story is our own. Yes, we hurt each other. Yes, we are afraid. Yes, we often feel vulnerable. But God comes to us, wrestling with us in our own darkness. When we know the blessing of God within our soul, we are free to love, free to embrace others. Our willingness to wrestle with God, that's what produces that permeability that is directly correlated to the possibility of reconciliation in our world. Reconciliation is not an arrival, but a journey. And it's too bad that we had to stop the story in verse 11, because Jacob and Esau continue to struggle past this passage, which is kind of a relief, isn't it? You know, we think we're going to have this happy reunion, and then it continues to be hard sometimes. I love what my friend Kara Root, who's a pastor in Minnesota, said this week on her Facebook page. Sometimes you have to figure out how to remain open when it feels impossible, how to stay sad instead of getting bitter, and what to do with the love and longing. The journey of reconciliation is to do the work of Jacob in the night, to know the blessing of God's love deep in our souls, to forgive those who have hurt us, and to live in this world with open arms, walking out from our trenches into the battle zone to love just as Jesus did. Amen. I'd like to invite the ushers to receive this morning's offering.